This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
We haven't started the show yet. I just wanted to, but sort of host to host, I wanted to ask you, because this won't run for a few weeks, but we're recording this, I think, right after you just put out your season finale.
We wrapped season one.
And you had a guy that
put it to bed, as they say in the business.
You had a guy that we've had on the show. Nice guy, but I was pleased to see you had the same problem with him we did. You had Dana Gould on.
Yes. I was misinformed. I thought it was the famous Dana.
Right. I guess that's it. Because we
church
kept
asking, lady.
Yeah, he wouldn't do the church lady for us either.
No, he was a writer. Oh God, a writer. Oh good. Glad it's not sweeps.
I couldn't finish the episode. I've been through that enough with him. I just didn't want to.
Yeah, maybe next week we can get High Aver back to come in. You know, really, really sex it up.
Yeah, but I thought you handled it well. That was some masterful hosting, because that's when you find yourself with a guest
part
like
of the,
that.
It's part of the job. Is I call it making a meringue. It's just whipping something out of thin air. You got nothing there, and you just got to whip it up.
Well, you are the master of that, sir, and we're pleased to have you. And any tips you want to give us as we go, I think.
You know, the trick to interviewing people is you have to pretend you're in love with them. You're in love with them. You're on a date. What do you want? That's the secret. And that's why I always have a small mirror just below the monitor. Because if I'm not in love with them, just below the eye line, there's pay dirt.
Should we get you ready to get started, Joe?
I thought we had started. It says recording on it.
Well, yeah, but we haven't really, you know, I can't imagine.
And this is just, this is audio. One day we're going to get you guys visual. We're going to move you up in the world.
That'd be great.
We're going to shake that tree.
I would hate to have to shower before recording, though. That would be, I miss the old days of recording in a studio where we had to wear pants. That was fun. We had to drive. We had to drive to Burbank. And some people, that was too far to go, but. Where are you coming to us from, Doctor?
Well, I'm up in the hill. You know, I'm up in the hills. We just wrapped, as I said, and I'm, I decompress for a couple of days. I decompress. I have a hot. I basically first couple of days after I wrap, I lay in the bed and I cover myself in hot wet towels. Then, I dust the fitted. I have a fitted sheet and I just dust it with talcum. And then I sort of roll around in that. And then I stand nude in front of a full-length mirror under harsh lighting and I'm very frank with myself.
And
then I come to terms with that. I learn to love what I see in the mirror and then I can relax and then I decompress. Tomorrow night, I'm going to play Mahjong with McLean Stevenson. That's my first outing since rapping. And then this weekend, I'm probably going to go up to Ojai, catch up with Susie Plachette. Prior away from the horses, and we'll probably go antiquing down in Carpinteria. I always like to go antiquing with Susie Plachette because half the time people think I'm trying to shoplift her out of the store.
And you've all had your shots now? Is that
had my shot? Yeah, like a pound, like a puppy from the pound. I've had my shots. I'm all good. You can take me home. It is there's the Pfizer. There's right. The J&J and the Moderna. I had the Rankin Bass, which it takes care of COVID and fills you with childhood.
And how do you get the talcum out of your fur?
It stays with me. It shakes out normally. That's what I mean. It's like an investment. It's going to be with you a while, but that's how we do it. You know, when you're covered in fur. And this is something you can ask Albert Brooks if you ever have him on. It's a different sort of hygiene.
I can only imagine.
This is The Movies That Made Me with your hosts, Josh Olson
and Joe Dante.
Thank you.
But that's what we're going to talk about. That's what I wanted to talk to you about on the show is bad fur, bad ape suits. Actors in ape face. Oh, it gets me.
Does it bother you?
Oh, it gets me.
Well,
I understand it. They're not, you know, no, it's rare that you get an ape of my talent, of my crossover talent. But, you know, it's the same way Native Americans, you know, when I say we were going to, you know, when I see a bad ape suit, when I say, let's take a film I was in Planet of the Apes, and I was myself, but there were some other amazing apes in that great ape makeup in that movie. And I swallowed hard and I took the check. I'm not going to complain. Johnny Chambers, great guy, crazy as a shithouse rat, but a genius, came up with that stuff. I'm not gonna deny credit where it's due. But then you get to Escape from the Planet of the Apes, and they have a gorilla suit in that movie that is so bad. I don't understand it. I for people that had access to wonderful ape makeup, to literally get an ape suit that looked like a like from a Love American style sketch, it was that's like, ask, do you know Chief Dan George?
Of course, yes.
If you've ever sat through an F Troop marathon with Chief Dan George, you know how I felt watching Escape from the Planet of the Apes. It's just galling.
So you're saying all the apes in that movie were played by old Jewish guys?
No, it's the same thing. It's like, they couldn't even, what the? Old Jews and Italians.
I'm sure you know that sort of we don't like to talk to our guests about their work. We like to talk about other work, but yes. I do have to ask. As
Battle of the Network Stars, I'll tell you.
Well, I can't, with the Planet of the Apes films, were you upset to see that? Because you're only in, if I believe, the first one, correct?
I'm in the first two, and then
the first two. That's right, because you got some scenes in.
Here's how I ended up in the first. I was doing With Six You Get Egg Roll at the Pasadena Playhouse with a young Lindsay Wagner, who's a delight, and you have to have her. You have to get her on. And Artie Jacobs, who was a friend, I knew Artie through Sammy Davis Jr. At the time, Sammy Davis Jr. was in talks to play a role in Dr. Doolittle that Artie had convinced Dick Zanuck to finance. Neither one of them will ever live that down. And then Sammy was in Dr. Doolittle, and that, well, first, believe it or not, Sidney Poitier was the character. It's a character from the book. I can't remember the name of it, but the character. It's not very enlightened by today's standards. And then Sammy was in it, and then he was out of it. But Sammy was, long story short, Sammy was friends with Artie. And Artie told me about this thing, Planet of the Apes. And I said, well, I gave him my number. And back then we had the exchanges. So, you know, my number was Briarcliff 23156. And, you know, Artie called me. I was originally just going to be a technical consultant because, as I said, there were only a handful of apes that really knew how to do, really knew how to act. The rest was just going to be, as we call it now, men in ape face. I ended up reading Dr. Zaius in the auditions. And at the end of the thing, he said, damn it, there's only one person. I hear his your voice now. You have to do it. Eddie Robinson was going to play him originally, but Eddie bowed out because he had a bum ticker. His heart only beat once every 3 minutes.
And did it ever, I mean, I don't want to bring up old wounds, but the fact that Roddy McDowall went on.
Oh, please, please. I'm a roadmap of wounds. I have more scars than Frankenstein.
How did you feel about the fact that a guy in ape face went on to be in all the movies?
You know, it's just one of those things. You know, how do you think there's an old story about a young man from Tupelo, Mississippi, who could sing like nobody else, but he was black and nothing happened. And then a guy named Elvis Presley learned how to sing just like him, and the next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. It's the way our culture works, and you either swallow it and you move on, or you let it destroy it.
Well, I
just gotta love. You know the old expression about a willow and an oak?
I don't.
A willow will bend, in the wind, and an oak refuses to bend, and that's why they break and fall over. And here I am still here because I bend.
And here you are, yeah, years later, successful talk show. No,
I go from Planet of the Apes to helped create BJ and the Bear, Battle of the Network Stars, Six Love Boats. You know, I stay busy, I stay active, and that's why I'm too busy to die. That's what I say.
Wasn't BJ a knockoff of
some people, they get up in the morning, they get nothing to do. I get up in the morning, I got Tai Chi with Chuck McCann at the bottom of cold water. No, I got a reason to get out of bed.
But wasn't BJ and the Bear, wasn't that a knockoff of those Clint Eastwood?
It was two very separate things.
Because BJ and the Bear was about a truck driver.
BJ and the Bear is about a truck driver with a chimpanzee. Originally, it was going to be BJ and myself going to a post-apocalyptic world, and I was going on and on about the destruction of man and the pestilence, etc. So there's a lot of stuff in the old. It was originally BJ and C. And then they tested it. The only thing that tested worse was before Robert Forrester was the lead and Jillian was the head of SWAT. That didn't test. Then they brought this tested just as badly. So somewhere at the Museum of Broadcasting, they'll do Angelian SWAT and Dr. Z's BJ and Z, and you can see them both at the Museum of Broadcasting. So, but the orangutan movie, I'm not Clyde was the orangutan in Every mm-hmm. Which Way But Loose, mm-hmm. and then they made Every Which Way You Can, which was the sequel to Every Which Way But Loose. And thank God they made the sequel, because there were so many unanswered questions at the end of Every Which Way You Can. Really, it was like The Godfather 2. Like, thank God, don't leave me hanging. I have to know what happened. Who else can he flip off? Isn't there people?
And you must have known. I mean, I can't imagine. It's a small town for monkeys, right?
That was my movie. That was my role. The problem is I was doing a movie in Spain and I had picked, and I was supposed to wrap that movie and get right over to America. But fun story, while in Spain, and I won't say how, I picked up a form of chlamydia that they thought was brought into Earth by a downed satellite. It was that rare. And I couldn't get back into the country for 6 months, but I'm not jealous of Clyde. You know, Clyde is my friend. I drove Clyde to rehab because I told him, when your new best friend is Andy Dick, your next best friend is Betty Ford. Mark my words. But he's doing well. He's doing good. Yeah, he's doing well. Trying to get some crowns for him.
Because I think ultimately, I would say, he had that moment, but you've stayed consistent. You've been there throughout.
You can only be the new guy once.
Right. Right.
And then it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I never, my goal is you never see too much of me, and you only see just enough. And then it's a long game. It's a long game. That's why I turned down Schindler's List on Ice, because I knew it was going to be too big. It was going to put my name everywhere. And I can do this and I can have a huge renaissance, but then you got to come back from it. And I'd rather lay low.
And were you going to play Oscar Schindler?
Yes, I was. On Ice.
On ice. Yes. Sure. And so you can skate.
No. Yeah. He had the humanity of Oscar Schindler and the ice magic of Dorothy Hamill. That's what I was going for. Can I put those two together? Can I make that a character?
I mean, you had to have at least thought about it.
The Schindler Camel. Sure, the Schindler Camel. I was doing, you know, you come, you drive out here. We'll go to a skating rink. We'll go to the rink in Van Nuys. We'll get some ice time and I'll show you what I did.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, I'm terrified to skate. I have no coordination. But
really?
I'm tall. A lot of tall people have these problems.
I did not know. And you can't skate.
Can't skate.
Have you ever had this happen? This is off topic, but I want to ask you a question. I don't, I don't go in for extreme sports. You know, I'm not one of those people that needs to be on the verge of death to have a good time. And as you know, this is not a big deal. I lived next to Paul Newman in Malibu for a long time. Paul and I were friends. And then he never forgave me. I sold my house to Keith Moon. And then that was the end of that relationship. But before Keith moved in, and if you've ever rolled Harry Nilsson out of your driveway, that's an experience you don't forget. We used to go skiing, and I ski in moderation, you know. I don't have to slide down a glacier at 100 degrees. So I'm in the ski lift in the chair. Have you ever gone skiing? Do you ski, either one of you fellas?
I don't ski either. I've been in the chair, though.
So this chair, you know, it goes about 30 feet off the ground. And this is back in 66, 67. There's no safety bar. You're just there in the chair. It's just like two lawn chairs tied together and you're about 30 feet off the ground. I figure I'm fine. Then it goes over the hill that I thought was the end of the chair. And then there's a 300-foot gorge. And I'm just sitting over it in a chair with no safety harness. This is up in Mammoth. And here's the thing, have you ever had this feeling? I wasn't afraid I was going to fall. I was afraid I was going to jump.
Oh, sure.
Like, oh, yeah, we've all had that.
It's like, I don't want to kill myself, but if I did, what a great opportunity. they just made it so we, it's like buying cat food. I don't have a cat, but it's on sale. I brought it home. everything's going great, but boy, this is just, it's too tempting to turn down. It was the only thing that kept me was I had nothing to write a note on because I wanted to, you know, you want to go out with a good note.
I'll leave a message. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever I write on my suicide note, it's going to end with, well, anywho, but to know that was the strangest thing, but I mentioned Andy, he's one of these people, like they're not having a good time unless they feel like their life is threatened. You know, like, hey, let's go make that bear give us blowjobs. No, let's not. Let's not do that. Let's go tell those cops who they really work for. That's probably a bad idea. Don't do that. Very, very difficult.
You want to talk to us about ape movies with you. Now, I do want to say
ape movies in quotes, because
I feel like this could get
terrible apes.
Right. I mean, and we do like to avoid kind of controversy and politics in this show because it does alienate some of our listeners.
the few that are left.
But the opportunity to talk to you was too much. So.
Oh, stop it.
No, we're very excited.
We both know that Elke Summer dropped out and you called me up. I'm always that's what I hated about Merv. Like, you know, Merv taped it four. I'm telling you nothing you don't know. And gosh darn it, my phone would always, 325, my phone would, hey, Z, what are you doing? Like, what happened? Did Frank Gorshin have a flat? You know, who is it today? Who has a flat now? I was the West Coast Tony Randall for a long, long time. He'll do it.
Well, now I got to ask, because did you ever do Mike Douglas? I'm from Philadelphia, so.
Of course, sort of our, Mike, you know. Mike made my day on more than one occasion. I did Chuck Berry and I co-hosted a week for Mike, and we had a great old time. You know who I did Mike with? Mason Reese, and he was gonna play. Mason Reese and I were gonna do Tuesday in the Park with George together, and that fell apart. But Mike was in Circle in the Square, down in the Village, and he was a good egg. Mason, God bless his heart, he looked like he looked like Mickey Rooney's reflection in a puddle. I don't know how else to describe the poor fella. He looked like a normal looking guy from 50 yards away. He looked like a really good looking guy standing up to his neck in the pool.
We might have to delete that, Joe. That seems a little. But no, I was wondering, you know, it's
funny. He can't be alive.
I wonder if Mike ever told you. So Philadelphia, we had this radical group called MOVE back in the early 70s. I don't know if you know this. This is a true story. MOVE. And they were very ahead of the curve. One of their concerns was animal rights. And I guess Mike Douglas had a, I know this was when you were on because it was a chimpanzee. He had a chimpanzee on the show, and they were very upset by the way the chimpanzee was treated.
Sure.
So they stormed the studio and they handcuffed Mike Douglas to a camera to protest.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, I mean, would that have been the kind of thing? I mean, secretly, would you have been?
I think they probably had me on to make up for that treatment. You know, chimpanzees, you know, it's like, you know, they're
they hit them with blackjacks. I mean, this is apparently very hard to control.
if you've ever read the story of Scatter, Elvis's chimp, it's a nightmare. It is that poor animal. They're not pets. They shouldn't. They're not. They're wild animals. They're not like orangutans. They're not pets. You can only work with them when they're children, or they'll you know, chimpanzees, unlike any of the other great apes. Chimpanzees have a thing called an attack protocol. The first thing a chimpanzee does when it assaults you is it breaks your jaw so you don't bite it. And then it chews your hands off so you can't claw it. And then it tears your genitals off so you can't make a move. And, you know, chimpanzees are so full of themselves. They actually think that after they've broken your jaw and chewed off your hands, you still might make a move on them. You still might make a play for it. Like, I don't know. I still think I have a shot.
So you can see why they'd rather go with Roddy McDowell.
Yeah, you'd rather go with Roddy. Lord, he was a... Who doesn't love Roddy? Who doesn't love Roddy?
Well, do you want to start kind of talking about these films? You've got a...
Yeah, let me do my Roddy impression. Hang on.
Oh, okay, great.
Oh, hello. Thank you. That's it. It's amazing. In Battle for the Planet of the Apes, he has a line where he goes, and it's amazing because he's a stirring military leader and also a little fey, and he managed fight like apes, and he just pulls it off. He's ready to scratch their eyes out.
That is outside of the first film. That is my favorite line of any apes movie.
That's the only film where it's horses versus school bus.
Yes.
And civilization hangs in the balance.
Wonderful. Chuck
was wise to step away. So yes, when you talk about, well, you know, we want to keep things relevant. We have to keep things in the, timely. And the big movie now is Godzilla versus Kong. Which is, it's all computer. It's all, you know, there's about 7 shots in there that are just people in a room. And the rest is just, but you have to go back to the original.
Yes.
One of my favorite, here's why this, it's one of my favorite movies to watch with the sound off, because it's so insane, it's actually beautiful. It's like a Captain Beefheart album. It's so insane. It's gorgeous.
Now, which movie is this we're talking about?
King Kong versus Godzilla, 1962, I believe, Toho. Yeah. It's the Kong suit is possibly the worst gorilla suit
ever.
It's not.
And it's really
so terrible.
And to follow up Kong with that, it really is like, it's like if the Beatles and then the Beatles' second album, but they had the Shags play. It's like, how do you follow up something so good with something so insanely terrible? And the reason was, they say this, that RKO, who leased them the rights to the film, RKO said, And this is one of those dumb, you know, it's like, okay, you can do it, but he can't look like King. You can call him King Kong, but he can't look like King Kong. Well, great. Thanks. That helps a lot. And so they didn't even make him look like a gorilla. They made him look like the I think it's called a macaque. It's like a Japanese monkey, those little pink face things. And so the whole thing was misconstrued. But there's a wonderful story behind it. If I could bore you with it, I can wrap it up in under 60 seconds. The whole thing started. Willis O'Brien, who was the special effects genius who did the original King Kong. He's terrible to have lunch with because he moves an inch, stops, moves another inch, stops. He was getting on in years, had a very interesting life, and now it's the early 60s, and he wants to make another King Kong movie. And he comes up with this idea called King Kong versus Frankenstein. And he thinks this can be a movie. They're going to make Frankenstein really big, and it's going to be all stop motion. Now, he doesn't. He thinks that he has the rights to do this. He doesn't. But he thinks he'll get him along the way. So he brings in a producer, a guy named John Beck. Now, John Beck knows he doesn't have the rights. And he knows that Willis doesn't have the rights, and he knows that he, John Beck, does not have the rights. So the first thing he does is he goes behind Willis O'Brien's back and goes and sells it to Toho, who did the Godzilla movies. Well, then enter a guy named Marion C. Cooper, who produced King Kong, and he said, no, you can't do this. I have the rights. Turns out he didn't have the rights either. So John Beck sold it, made a mint. What I love about the story is the only guy that made money was the guy who never, ever pretended to have the rights. The two guys that thought they were entitled to make the movie both got shafted. And the one guy who started from the gate going, nope, I'm just stealing this puppy. He was the one that got the payday. It's kind of a good Hollywood story.
It's a true story, too.
It's unbelievable. You have to admire the, I guess you could say, is a family show, Cojones, I guess you could say. But sure, you're just like, I'll steal it. Sounds good.
So wait, what is the deal with the rights, Jody? Because I guess, I've seen the new one.
Well, RKO owned the rights, but RKO was no longer a viable entity. So it was whoever had bought RKO, and I don't know if the people who bought RKO.
It was General Tire for a while.
General Tire, yeah. And so who at the tire company, you know?
Who owns King Kong? Because apparently the thing in the new film is they can never call him King Kong. They only call him Kong. I didn't know that.
I just
found that out yesterday, which is hilarious because there's a scene straight out of Conan where he sits down on a throne with a big axe and they all but call him, but they never say King Kong.
Because, you know, gorillas are always walking around with tools. Gorillas use axes.
So, yeah, I mean, I kind of thought you were going to build. I can't imagine there's a worse monkey suit than King Kong versus Godzilla. It is.
But however, to revisit the film, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful film. It's a complete. It's like a fever dream.
Yep.
There's a miniature octopuses. There's a. It's the first time, if you really study the Toho films, if you really study the Jap, it's the first time that the kaiju became I'm low on denture grip. It's the one thing I forgot to pick up. Yeah, say that again, Joe.
I don't know if I could.
Anthropomorphized, which is that. Well, the point I'm trying to make is that in Godzilla and then Godzilla Raids Again, ostensibly he moved the way a lizard would ostensibly move. King Kong and King Kong move. This, they're just acting like wrestlers in suits. They're clapping. They're throwing rocks at each other. They're doing headlocks and tumbles, and they're doing all of this stuff that a lot of the old hardcore OG Toho people thought was awful, but the effects man who did those films, a guy named Aiji Subaraya, he thought it was a great idea, and it was, and boy, it was like gangbusters. It just took, it was like kids and drugs. They just loved it. They couldn't get enough of it. And that was the beginning of how they did all that.
You'll be glad to know that John Beck went on to produce The Singing Nun right after that.
He did. I've often wondered, let me ask you a question. Remember The Flying Nun?
Yeah.
There used to be, for people that are younger, that there used to be a TV show called The Flying Nun, starred Sally Field, and she was a nun who could fly. This is how I think that show was pitched. The people who pitched it were in the waiting room at the network, and they said, "Do you have any ideas?" The other guy went, "No." I don't see who goes in with the flying nun. I think a seagull hit the window during the meeting, and they thought, this could be an idea. What if a nun flew into the window? I don't know how you come up with that.
What if a nun flew over the cuckoo's nest?
A nun flew over the cuckoo's nest. Now there's some. Get me Mad Magazine. Nun flew over the. Get me Sergio Aragonés on line one. Yeah, there's a. What's the show? It's The Flying Nun. Fine, you know. But that was the '60s. It was a different era. You know, Hogan's Heroes. Yes. It's a kooky, crazy comedy set in a concentration camp. Thank me later.
And it's so bizarre too, because growing up with that stuff, you just sort of, you know, as a child, I can't imagine, Joe, what was like, you know, I'm a kid. It's like, okay, these are what TV shows are. They're these crazy guys. But as an adult, would you stumble across The Flying Nun or Hogan's Heroes and just go, what the hell is going on?
There was Style Like 17, and then there was Hogan's Heroes. I mean, the idea of making a comedy set in a, you know, in that kind of a camp was not new. And it was just a goofy sitcom show. It could have been set in a. It could have been like Taxi, you know, with Nazis.
Yeah, it could have, except for the Nazis. Yeah.
That's the thing, is that you couldn't. Of course, you couldn't do it today. But the people who were doing it at the time actually fought the Nazis.
Yes.
The people who are doing it today that would be so offended have never fought a Nazi. And maybe it's that distance that allows them to have the revulsion, where the people that were so close, who cares?
I think I just want to tell you the other day that the guy who played the French actor who played the French guy on the show.
Robert Terry was in.
In a camp, right?
Yes. And Bob Crane, the careless Cupid. That's what we called him.
Did you ever have any dealings with
Bob Crane? Sure. I knew Bob. I actually sold him a 10-speed through the recycler. He's a good egg. Paid cash. Drove the bike away. It was a good bike, too. It was Fuji.
Fascinating character. There's an interesting biopic about him.
Yeah, we don't want to go down. We don't want to go down the Bob Crane rabbit hole. By the way, Bob Crane rabbit hole is a very famous sex move in certain circles. That was back from my days when I used to live down the road from Bob Guccione. I taught him how to use buttons on a shirt. He didn't know how they worked.
We want to pause for just a minute to thank our sponsor, MoviesUnlimited.com, the movie collector's website. They're actually huge fans of our show, which we love, because we love all of our listeners. And they feature pretty much every one of the movies we talk about here, except for the incredibly obscure ones that have never been released on video. So you can find them and add them to your collection.
Sure, you can stream a lot of stuff these days. But when you buy your favorites, you watch what you want, when you want, and there's a ton of great content and bonus features like director's commentaries, deleted scenes, and all sorts of goodies that you don't get elsewhere.
They're great. In fact, they're when I was growing up in Philadelphia, we would get the Movies Unlimited catalog, because they're from Philly and they're still putting it out. It's this big giant phone book size thing that has like every movie that's out on video. It's fantastic. So buy your favorites at moviesunlimited.com. You're going to find classics, imports, hard-to-find films, and, of course, tons of new releases. Seriously, they do imports. They do stuff with other regions. They're great. It's a great resource. The prices are fantastic. The choices are endless. Own all the titles you love and enjoy all the bonus features that you just don't get elsewhere.
So if you want to own your own experience, click the Movies Unlimited banner on our website and buy your favorites from hard-to-find films, imports, and more. Go now to moviesunlimited.com, the movie collector's website, where shipping is always free on orders over $50. So feel free to spend lots of money.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But as a simian, when did you start wearing clothes and learning to button things?
Well, again, like right out of the right, the minute you left home, I realized that this wasn't working. And you know, it was at the time I first got into, you know, I was raised, a lot of most orangutans come from the rainforest. I was raised in a little town called Showmanship, USA. And the first thing I did before I could hoot, before I could climb, you know what I learned how to do? Dazzle. And I wake up in the morning, I have a cup of tea, I dazzle, and then I dazzle till I'm out of gas, and then it's 40 winks. And so I had three straw boaters before most orangutans my age could climb to the top of a eucalyptus tree. I'm all about the big finish.
Is there a secret? Because I feel like sort of the fundamental skills that people used to have in showbiz are kind of getting lost. Is there a secret?
That's true. Because I was a hoofer when I started off. I was a song and dance man. We used to call them hoofers. And my first regular gig was opening for a little musical group called The Runaways. Joan Jett, Lita Ford, the gals. And I opened up for The Runaways in Japan, did a little soft shoe. And great group of gals. Boy, walk in that dressing room, cut the Aquanet with a knife. But they were fun gals. They were fun gals. I met them through Joan Jett. I met Joan through Debbie Harry, who used to live across the hall from me when I was in New York, watched my cat.
Wash your cat?
Watched my cat when I was out of town.
Watched my cat.
And she went on to have a great career. So I knew all those. I knew that whole group of kids. But it's all about. Show. I say this to people. It's a show. It's a show. And I guess it was Brando. I mean, maybe it was Brando that implied a lot of that it was a. This serious, I never looked at acting as an art for which one had to suffer.
Right.
To me, it was just, you know, you get up, you put on your makeup, you hit your mark, you say your line, you get out of there. You know, you don't, if you're playing a fat guy, you don't have to gain 40 pounds. They have guys that'll do that for you. Just put it. Don't overthink it. The hardest part, I had a great acting teacher who told me that the hardest part about acting is getting over the fact that at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be that hard.
That's good advice.
It was Florence Henderson.
if you
called her Flo-Ho.
So I'm imagining you watching King Kong vs. Godzilla. Are you, when you're watching a movie like that, are you... I mean, obviously, there's the kind of sting of it's a guy in a suit.
Oh, I have so much distance. I howl at it.
Is there any part of you that's going like, well, that if I were doing this, this is how I would handle the part?
Oh no, because it's so far from any form. It's so far from any form of reality. When I watch a film, what I do is I look at films that I wish I was in, you know, and. That's where I get all angry. I really wish that I was the sheriff in the heat of the night when after Sidney Poitier says they call me Mr. Tibbs and he shows him his badge and he brings in the other detective and Rod Steiger just goes, "Oh yeah, man." That's the line I wish.
Yes. I can see you doing that.
Here's a line. Was it Norman? Who directed that? It wasn't
Jewison.
Norman Jewison. Yes. Here's something never heard on that set. Okay, Rod, now do one big. Just go nuts.
Rod won an Academy Award for that.
He did. He name checked the Maharishi in his acceptance speech. But same with Chuck on Apes. Then, all right, Chuck, now just throw it away. Do one really big. Go crazy.
Well, let's move on from King Kong. What's next? What do you have?
Well,
nothing can top that, though, right?
Well, no, in terms of Bad Ape, well, it's Toho made another King Kong movie. It's a very strange story. They made a movie called King Kong Escapes.
That's right.
And that was a company that I mentioned earlier in this. That was with a company, Rankin Bass, who had in the late 60s a King Kong as a Saturday morning cartoon.
Oh, God, I remember that. That's right.
King Kong, you know the name of King Kong, 10 times as big as a man. It was a Saturday morning cartoon. And those Sons of Guns used that they found a loophole and they made the movie, which is ostensibly a spin-off of the cartoon show. They made the movie King Kong Escapes through a loophole in that contract. And that ape suit is also an atrocity. It looks like someone dropped a bundt cake. I don't know what happened. How hard is it? I mean, is it so hard to make a...
Well, you know,
a lot of gorillas. It's not that hard.
They've been making ape suits for years, since the early 30s. You know, there's always apes with Charlie Gamora in them, and, you know, Emil Van Horn and all these guys who had their own ape suits.
Well, a movie I wanted to talk about, Murders in the Rue Morgue. Isn't it just as easy to make a suit that looks like a gorilla? I mean, isn't it just, I mean, had they not seen a gorilla? I mean, it doesn't look a thing. That's what I'm talking about. It doesn't look a thing like one. Isn't it just as easy to do? Well, let's make it look like that.
I mean, they seem to have gotten better as time goes on.
Well, no, they're impeccable now.
Well, I think they wanted, and on Murders of Lou Morgue, I think they wanted it to look creepy, you know, and, you know, and gnome-like. And the problem with that movie is that, you know, once you've established the reality of the ape suit, you can't intercut it with shots of real apes, which they do constantly, to the detriment of the movie.
Exactly. That's true. It's like apes, guy in an ape suit. Yeah. And Bela Lugosi trying to, and yet, God bless him, Bela Lugosi, who I talk about a workhorse. There's a guy, he gets up in the morning, he has a cup of coffee, a quart of grain alcohol, and he goes to goddamn work, and he plants his feet and he says his lines. It doesn't matter what the line is. I have a lot of respect for those. I have a lot of respect for old Bela. And yet still, acting next to a gorilla suit that looks like, you know, like somebody's discarded rug with a football helmet on top, and still somehow he was bigger. God bless him.
One of the greats.
And in the book, Murders of the Rue Morgue, the murderer, and this is how you know Poe didn't know his eyes from a hole in the ground, the murderer in the book is an orangutan.
That's right.
We are the most peaceful of all the great apes. I hate, we can't, you know, the most violent thing you'll catch an orangutan doing is eating ants off a stick.
I do feel that I should point out that you're bagging on the movie but at least they made it a gorilla instead of an orangutan. They were at least being sensitive.
I love the premise. But what are we going to do? Well, I'm going to turn a woman into a gorilla. How? Oh, just mix their blood. That's all you have to do. It's so easy. There's a thing in, not to revisit it, but in King Kong versus Godzilla, there's a line. I remember it. I jumped out of my chair. In the original concept of the movie was, as I said, it was Godzilla versus Frankenstein. And this is a vestige of that script, where at the end, they say that Godzilla is a reptile and that electricity can harm him. Kong is a mammal, so electricity makes him stronger.
Right. Yes.
That's news to a lot of people who have been electrocuted.
Sorry, his face glows, right? When it's hit the lightning.
Yeah, and that was a vestige from the Frankenstein script where the electricity would have made him stronger because he was right. But you can't just make up things like, you can't just make up physics. Well, you know, Kong was born on a Thursday, so he can walk on the water. No, he can't.
We watched it last night.
How many children thought, "Oh, I want to be stronger. Let me stick my finger in the toaster."
You showed what to your wife last night?
We had fallen prey to the zeitgeist and watched the new Kong Godzilla movie a couple of weeks ago, and you
subjected her to King Kong versus Godzilla.
I subjected to the old one. Yes, the 62 one. We watched it last night. We actually, Criterion has the. I guess it's the original cut, the Japanese cut of the film on the new Godzilla set.
And the Japanese cut of King Kong and Godzilla is like the sorrow and the pity. I mean, it's a totally different film. How different can it be?
It's pretty great. We were both startled.
Toshiro Mifune is in it. He cries. It's just a totally different film.
But they go to Skull Island and all the natives who are, I suppose, supposed
the
to
Japanese
be Africans,
people in brownface.
They're Japanese people in blackface, which is... interesting, but yeah, the part that took on a real kind of different context watching it today was Kong fighting the octopus, because of course we're all, like you, Joe, deeply moved by my octopus teacher last year, and could only think of this noble creature that we had spent time with in that dock being ripped into pieces by this crazed gorilla. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, that's a very anti-octopus movie.
Yes, it is.
And they did eat the octopus that they used. They went through a couple of them, and they did have one of them for lunch.
Well, they did that in My Octopus Teacher too. So the shark eats them.
Oh, you've anyway, strayed from the simian origins of our discussion.
I'm so sorry. This is why I wanted Dr. Z on. He knows how to host. We're still figuring this out.
We're far afield. Now we're into octopus stories. I can tell you octopus stories all day long. Fun fact. Here comes a fun fact. The special effects team that did the Kraken in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, mm-hmm. they said, "Watch King Kong versus Godzilla. Notice, watch how the tentacles move. That's what we want." Best fake octopus tentacles is it came from beneath the sea.
Well, they're stop motion.
Yeah.
Exactly. It just says it.
Yes.
It's like Willis O'Brien trying to eat a sandwich. An inch, stop, an inch, stop, an inch. You can tell it's stop motion, but again, and there are certain movies like this. They're vaguely beautiful. They're beautiful to look at. They don't work as movies, but there's a handful of them. King Kong versus Godzilla is one. War of the Gargantuas is another. You Only Live Twice, which is filmed at Toho, a lot of the same actors. Mia Hama is in both King Kong versus Godzilla and You Only Live Twice. They're great movies to watch with the sound off, because there's something about the matte paintings and the miniatures. Mm-hmm. There's a folk art quality to it that's beautiful, and they might not work completely as movies, but they're gorgeous to look at. I made a couple of those. We'll keep me out of it.
All right, give us another monthly.
But
movie.
A lot of my best work, people don't know is me, yes. Because I submerge myself in McCabe and Mrs. Miller. I was the wily prospector, but nobody even knew it was me. That's how I prefer to work.
Well, that's how a lot of facial hair can help you.
Exactly. In Le Mans, I was the wily pit crew technician. Any character who's wily and has a beard, usually that's me.
We'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Have you ever seen Slapshot?
Of course.
The Wiley Zamboni driver. That was me. Not a lot of people know that.
Well, you don't. Yeah, he's sort of.
Well, you don't take credit. You don't take
exactly. Billing. You know, because it's not about me. It's about the character.
Right. I thought it was a SAG issue.
Well, I'm only a. I'm not really a doctor. My first name is Doctor. That's how that works. If I became a doctor, I would be Dr. Doctor.
So on the set, they must say, "Ready for you, D DZ.
They call me DZ or just Z. Just call me Z. I just call me Z, which is the name of my Broadway show. Just call me Z. It was originally Zayas with a Z. And then I get Liza Minnelli calling me at 4 a.m. Beep, 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 beep.
I have learned so much doing this one.
Liza Minnelli is so loud that I put the phone down. I had lipstick on my ear. She was the woman was wearing so much lipstick, it came through the phone lines.
You got another monkey movie for us, Doc?
Well, there's murders in the room. There's murders in the room morgue that we talked about a little bit. But it comes out of that. It comes out of that era. And it's one of my it's one of the most eye rolling appearances of a bad ape suit that you're ever going to encounter. It's a little film called Diamonds Are Forever, and they're in it's 1969, 1970, and they're in Las Vegas, and Jill St. John is escaping some nefarious bad guy, and she ditches into like a makeshift carnival at the Circus, and they have a scene where the magic trick is they have a black woman turn into a gorilla.
She's like, in a bikini, right?
And you just want to go, guys, take 5 minutes and think this through. What if you took 5 minutes and thought this through? Again, and it's a terrible, you know, this is what you think. It's Sean Connery is coming back as James Bond. Do you think they had money? Was there money in the budget? Spend the money. It was 1970 by now. You could get a decent suit. You could get Bob Burns to come over there and do something. Good gravy. But it was just one of those things where it just wasn't important to them at the time. But that's another one of those movies that the interesting thing, if you want to go down to the James Bond rabbit hole for just a moment, it's they have some James Bond has a great history of terrible fake animals. The giant snake fight in Moonraker comes to mind instantly. But Sean Connery's Diamonds Are Forever is a Roger Moore James Bond film.
That's a valid observation.
It had already become it was the first light comedy James Bond movie. And it was really much more of a Roger Moore film than a Sean Connery film. It's funny that Roger Moore came to it too late. And I just remember that in between You Only Live Twice and Diamonds Are Forever, I don't know exactly what Connery did with all of his time, but something tells me bourbon had a lot to do with it. And there's a scene where he takes off his shirt and his toupee's on wrong, and he's got a gut. He looks like my dad. And she's like, "Oh, James." And it's like, no, there's no "Oh, James." It looks like my dad when he came home. It looks like my dad's been in the, my dad fell asleep near the pool.
He's still Sean Connery, though. Come on.
He's still Sean Connery, but it's definitely, you know, You Only Live Twice was four years and 6 decades away, it seems, in whiskey years.
Could also be a species thing. It just, he might not do it for you anyway.
It could be, yeah. It's a Scottish thing. But Sean, it's so funny because Sean had a toupee. All he had to do was comb the hair over from his shoulders. He could have just combed it right up and down, and he didn't need it. Good egg though, Sean. I like Sean. Do you know the story of Sean Conn and Johnny Stampinato? Joe, I bet. Do you know that story?
No, that one hasn't crossed my path.
Apparently, the movie star that Johnny Stampinato dated, her daughter killed Johnny Stampinato.
Lana Turner.
Thank you, Lana Turner. Apparently, Sean Connery has a bit part in a movie. In the Lana Turner movie, Johnny Stampinato comes down to the set to intimidate all of the men on the movie to not make a move on Lana Turner. This could be urban legend, but it makes sense. He tries to intimidate Sean Connery. Sean Connery doesn't go for it. He reveals that he has a gun. Sean Connery takes the gun away, throws it down, and then punches him out. And I believe that's true. Even if it's not true, I'd like to think it is.
It should be true. Yes.
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 I'm sorry. No, not Sean Connery. Wally Cox. I'm sorry. I had the wrong actor.
I don't remember Wally and Atlanta making a picture together.
Mrs. Brando. Mrs. Brando, we called him.
I absolutely believe that story.
I do believe that. You know, sometimes you hear something about a celebrity. Sean Connery was a violent drunk. Yeah, I believe that.
Well, you know, there are rumors about you, Dr. Z, you know.
Here's the thing.
Joe.
Well, I hate to bring it up, but I mean, now it's the subject of, so, you know.
He's always doing this.
Well, he can address it. It's an opportunity for him. He can say what he wants about it.
I have been on both sides of sobriety's gorge, and
which side are you on now?
Oh no, I'm sober. I'm sober as a judge now. But I used to play a game with Vincent Price, where Vincent Price and I would go for a walk, and every time Vincent would breathe, I would drink, and so. It turned into quite a day, and do you remember that Vincent Price was the spokesman for Hangman, the game? It was a game. No, you can look it up on YouTube. That they sold. You know, Vinny would put his, God bless him, put his name on anything. We're trying to rebrand the Third Reich. We want to call it Vincent Price. That sounds fine. Let's do it. He wasn't picky. There was a Parker Brothers had a game of Hangman, and they had Vincent Price do it. The motivation for the thing came of Vincent Price finding me passed out in his rumpus room, thinking I was dead and drawing half a chalk outline around me before I came to. That's where they got the idea. And what I found, here's the thing about, especially when you're on the road, you spend a lot of time alone, and actors are innately insecure. And what I found was that by drinking, it would numb up a lot of those feelings, and that it's an easy habit to fall into. The downside is then you do things like you drive into a lake. You think you have the wrong set of keys, and you wake up behind the wheel of the Goodyear blimp, and you're over the Super Bowl, and you don't know how you got there.
Definitely a downside.
Yeah, you pass out in New York and wake up on Robbie Krieger's roof in Venice, and you don't know what happened. That's the danger of it.
Makes it hard to remember your lines too.
It does. I went to bed. I was at a party at the factory. Somebody gave me a glass of something. I don't know what it is. The next thing I know, I woke up on Robbie Krieger's roof. I'm in Venice. Edie Sedgwick is with me, and she says, "When are we going back to the boat show?" I don't even remember being at a boat show, but we were both wearing those little yachting caps that are now in the Jim Backus Museum. If you're ever. And Big Sur. Well, that tale took a Baroque turn.
I think we've done two.
No more Baroque than the rest of it. I'd say you're really going for Baroque.
Oh God!
You know, I'll tell you. If there's one thing you can know about me, it's that I love the business and I love the history of the business, and I fully embrace it. I was just before Hef died. God love him. I visited him at the mansion. And I shouldn't have done this, but I did it. I took a little test tube and I took a vial of water out of the grotto, and I took it to a genetics lab, and I'm growing my own James Caan.
What do you suppose happened to the grotto? You know, now that they've sold the place.
It can only have something to do with FEMA. I'm assuming they just put a bubble over it and hope that whatever is in there will stay in there. You know, you get it. You know, you get it. It's, you know, it's a it's a mix of Bill Cosby, Jimmy Kahn, and it's Don Adams. It's a scary mix.
Oh dear!
But boy, talk about broke. Boy, the last year at the mansion was just, you know, Great Expectations with Viagra instead of a wedding cake. It was a pretty grim doings. He looked like, towards the end, he looked like Uncle Creepy. If you remember your Warren publications. Now let's talk about Heidi Saha. No, I didn't go there.
How did we get down this road? Yes.
Not a lot of people knew that Dr. Z had a wealth of James Warren trivia. Oh.
Well, doctor, thank you. Thank you for keeping this appointment.
The doctor will see you now. That's what I always say. And you know, what you gentlemen do, I can't thank you enough for it. It's the only podcast I listen to that's not about murder. And, you know what you do, you know who you are, and it's really indispensable to the people who listen to. Because living in the world these days, it's like being in a barrel of crap, and it's all you can do to keep it out of your mouth. So thank you for what you guys do.
Well, we're putting as much of it into their heads as possible.
We're doing our best. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Doctor. It's a pleasure.
Maybe next time you come back and you can get maybe three movies next
can
time.
Can I give myself a plug?
Absolutely, sure. Yes. Are you making an appearance?
No, on Hulu. Look for Hulu. I just shot a remake of They Call Me Bruce, the old Johnny Yoon movie. So look out for that.
Okay. And when is that dropping?
I think that drops in June. I'm gonna do a remake. Dunstan checks in, but I'm not playing Dunstan. I stay busy.
Oh God, this is a ramble. I will never forget. I would kill to find video. Maybe one of our listeners can find it. William Hickey at the MTV Movie Awards. And all I remember is him. He came up on stage. It had to have been right for Princey's honor because he got sort of rediscovered. And I don't know what he was talking. I just remember him going off on, there was a movie called Monkey Trouble. Do you remember Monkey Trouble?
Oh, sure, of course. Monkey
with
Trouble.
With Harvey Keitel.
Yes, of course.
And all I remember is William Hickey going, and then there's Monkey Trouble, which is about all the trouble you get into with a monkey.
There's a phrase they used to throw around all the time, which was a Bill Hickey sense of elan. The one to look up for is, remember Kennedy, the MTV VJ?
Sure, yeah.
She's covering the opening of the movie Mission Impossible. And she's interviewing Marty Landau. And Marty, my old ice fishing buddy. And she goes, Marty Landau, da, 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 and she says, what brings you here? And he goes, well, I was in the show. I was in the show Mission Impossible. And she goes, oh, I that's why I didn't know. And so you got to fight, because then he walks away. He gets about four steps away and then he stops and he turns around and he storms back. And he goes, what do you mean you don't know? Then why do you have this job? You have one job, to know these things. And it's just beautiful. Poor Marty. God love him.
He was irreplaceable.
Great. Well, if you can't find it on YouTube, it's in a DVD, Great Moments in Wig Tape. So you can find it in either one.
Fantastic. Well, Doctor, it's been a real pleasure. I got to say, of all our guests, you're the one I've most wanted to ingratiate myself upon, so I can maybe hang out while these incredible stories are happening sometime.
You're just using me to get to Ann Gillian, but that's okay.
Just saying, if you ever need an entourage, Joe and I are here. So.
My pleasure.
The show is Hanging with Dr. Z. You're going to be coming back, I assume, for a second.
Yes, we just stopped. We just wrapped. But they're all up on YouTube. You can watch all the nine episodes. And then
National Treasures, everyone.
National Treasures, everyone.
Our show was recorded from several well-stocked bunkers. We can't wait to get back to beautiful downtown Burbank.
We're the official podcast of TrailersFromHell.com, the best damn movie website there is. Our engineer is the composer Don Barrett, who also transmogrified, produced, and created our theme song. This is Josh Olson for the Movies That Made Me. Stay safe out there, folks.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.